the S&P 500 closes in a bear market, what that means ahead of this week's Fed meeting. Plus, as lawmakers on Capitol Hill look to address gun violence, why a ban on assault weapons isn't part of the conversation.
So Republicans don't want it, and Democrats say they are in favor of an assault weapons ban, but they haven't taken much action to push one through. And the reasons are they think it's politically impossible.
Plus, pets act out as their humans return to the office, how some owners are coping. It's Monday, June 13th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The S&P 500 ended the day in a bear market, defined as a 20% loss from a recent high. It's the first time the index has fallen into a bear market since 2020. The S&P 500 ended the day down nearly 4%. The Dow shed about 875 points, or 2.8%. The Nasdaq lost 4.7%. Recent inflation data is raising the odds that the Fed could surprise markets with a 0.75 percentage point rate hike instead of the 0.5 percentage point previously signaled. Here's our markets reporter, Matt Grossman.
Investors have certainly been expecting the Fed to raise interest rates this year, but the inflation data was so high last week that it prompted a lot of people in the market to rethink exactly how fast interest rates might rise. As of last week, very few people in the market were expecting the Fed to raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage point. After the inflation data came out on Friday, a lot of people have started to give that credence as a really serious possibility. So I think people's expectations are just changing very quickly along with the economic data.
In more markets news, the price of Bitcoin fell below $23,000 today, according to CoinDesk. That's an 18-month low. Investors have been turning away from riskier assets, including cryptocurrency, amid record-high inflation. As we reported this morning, Celsius, one of the largest cryptocurrency lenders, said it was pausing all withdrawals, swaps, and transfers between accounts, citing extreme market conditions. The rout has also spread to cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase. Shares of the company closed down more than 11% at just over $52 a share, its lowest level ever. The exchange had reported losses of hundreds of millions of dollars in the first quarter, along with a decline in monthly transacting users, a trend executives expected would continue in the current quarter. Last week, Coinbase co-founder and CEO Brian Armstrong lashed out on Twitter after a petition surfaced purportedly from Coinbase employees, complaining about the company's recent performance and demanding top executives be removed. The House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol held its second hearing today. Lawmakers presented witness testimony alleging that former President Donald Trump knew he'd lost the 2020 election and that he continued to claim voter fraud both before and afterwards. The committee showed that several of Trump's advisors said on election night that it was too early to declare victory. But in videotaped testimony, Jason Miller, a former Trump campaign senior advisor, said that former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani advised Trump to do so, even while ballots were being counted.
Mayor Giuliani was saying, "We want it. They're stealing it from us. Where'd all the votes come from? We need to go say that we won." And essentially that anyone who didn't agree with that position was being weak.
Giuliani has not responded to a request for comment. Former Attorney General William Barr said he investigated Trump's claims of voter fraud in battleground states and on Dominion voting machines, and said he told Trump in a series of meetings that they were without merit.
And I was somewhat demoralized because I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality if he really believes this stuff. On the other hand, you know, when I went into this and would, you know, tell him how crazy some of these allegations were, there was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were. My opinion then and my opinion now is that the election was not stolen by fraud.
The Select Committee said the false claims of fraud inspired followers to donate $250 million to defend the election, money that was funneled to pro-Trump groups and the organization that ran the January 6th rally. Trump has said he did nothing wrong and continues to claim that the election was stolen from him. Coming up, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have been working on gun control legislation, but an assault weapons ban is off the table. We'll talk more about why that is after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
As we reported this morning, a bipartisan group of senators has reached a framework for new legislation addressing gun violence. The proposal includes incentives for states to enforce red flag laws and include juvenile records and background checks, plus funding for mental health programs and school security. One thing the proposal doesn't include? A federal ban on assault weapons. The nation's previous assault weapons ban, enacted in 1994, expired in 2004. President Biden and parents of the children killed in Uvalde, Texas, have renewed the push to bring back such a ban. But Republicans almost uniformly oppose it, and Democrats are reluctant to push it. So how did we get here, and why isn't an assault weapons ban on the table? Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal national reporter Zusha Ellenson. Hi, Zusha. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Emery. Really appreciate it.
So, Zusha, we've heard impassioned pleas from families of the victims of recent mass shootings to pass an assault weapons ban. We saw marches across the country in support of gun control over the weekend. Where does the public stand right now on an assault weapons ban?
Well, we looked at the polling, and it's a little over half, but it's certainly at a lower level than it's ever been, which is kind of interesting. The public is not that much in favor of a ban like this as they used to be, and I think there's a couple reasons. One is a lot of people have bought guns like the AR-15s. They know people who have them. Another thing is that the federal ban was shown to be not as effective as people wanted it to be. And then the third thing is that people see it as politically impossible.
So let's peel each of those out. Let's go back first to 1994, which was the last time an assault weapons ban was put in place as part of a broader anti-crime bill. What propelled that effort and what made it successful back then?
All right. So back then you had a pretty unusual political coalition pushing this through. And what you had was police chiefs and police officers all over the country asking Congress to ban these types of weapons because they were getting shot at in the streets, mainly by gangbangers. So they said, can you please get rid of these weapons? That gave Democrats a lot of cover to push this ban through as part of a massive anti-crime bill. They could say to their constituents, their gun-owning constituents, they could say, look, police officers want this, so we're going to have to pass this through. So it was police officers, Democrats, and then you had moderate Republicans from suburbs who at that time were in favor of gun control. The country was not as divided pro and anti-gun back then, so you had some Republicans who were willing to vote yes on gun control bills and some Democrats who were not. So with that unusual coalition, President Clinton pushed it through. And what happened after that was pretty fascinating. There was a huge backlash during the midterms, and a lot of people who voted for it got unseated, including the House Speaker. And ever since then, people have been really reluctant to vote for such a ban because they don't want to lose their seat in Congress.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. We are now in a very different political landscape. What can you tell us about the support for an assault weapons ban in Congress right now? It was not included in a gun bill package approved by the Democrat-led House last week, and Republicans now almost uniformly oppose such a ban. Where are we right now?
So Republicans don't want it, and Democrats say they are in favor of an assault weapons ban, but they haven't taken much action to push one through. And the reasons are, like we said before, they think it's politically impossible, but also they've looked at the research, and it doesn't definitively show that it had a huge effect. RAND Corporation does this big examination of all the literature about gun research, and they said that it was inconclusive whether the federal assault weapons ban had an effect. So that's one thing. The other thing is there's just a ton of these types of guns out there. Like I said before, there's 20 million AR-style rifles out there in the country now. The idea that you would go and take them from every person is pretty much implausible in America, given the politics and the culture.
So, Zusha, is there any realistic chance of an assault weapons ban passing the current Congress? And if not, where are gun control advocates focusing their efforts right now? What can pass in Congress?
So, yeah, I don't see that sort of thing passing anytime soon. There are states that have passed similar bans. What I see going forward is what we've seen in the Senate package, which is very modest little bites At the Apple, you see them trying to tighten up background checks for 18 to 21-year-olds. You see more funding for red flag laws. I think red flag laws, which allow authorities or relatives to go to a judge and ask, you know, to take guns from someone considered a danger to themselves or others, that's an area we're going to see more bipartisan support, and that's probably where you're going to see more forward movement on that issue.
Zusha, the push for more gun control comes at a time when many cities are experiencing an increase in gun violence. According to the nonprofit group Gun Violence Archive, in addition to the mass shootings in Uvalde and Buffalo, there have been more than 20 shootings in recent weekends in which at least four people were shot. Is this moving the needle?
I think what's pushing the national gun discussion is these mass shootings more than the everyday gun violence you're talking about. That horrific shooting in Uvalde, where everyone, you know, can imagine their kids at school, it's like the worst possible thing in the world. And that's really what drives the national political discussion on guns. It's not everyday gun violence. Certainly the rise in homicides the last couple of years may contribute to the discussion on the outer edges. And in the mid-90s, we were at an all-time record high of homicides, and that sort of helped frame the discussion on guns. But honestly, it is these mass shootings that really push the discussion forward.
Zusha, to that point, I've been seeing tweets by David Hogg, March for Our Lives co-founder and survivor of the Parkland High School mass shooting in Florida in 2018, that this time is different. He keeps repeating that refrain that this time is different. What is your sense of that? Are the conversations around gun rights and gun control different now than they have been in the past? Are we in a different moment?
I'm really interested to see what happens in the coming months and years after these series of mass shootings. What we've seen in the past, even after horrific incidences like Sandy Hook, is that there's a great swell of support for gun control, and then it dissipates without much getting done. I'll be curious to see what happens in this case, if there is actually forward momentum to get more gun control measures passed, or if it just evaporates like it has in the past. And the reason for that is somewhat the differences between the gun control and the gun rights movement. The gun control movement is very episodic, driven by big shootings in the news, and the gun rights movement is much more persistent and serious. And what happens if you look at the polls is that gun rights supporters pay very close attention to what their candidates do on guns. So they will go to the ballot box and vote someone out of office if they don't like how they voted on guns. On the liberal side, liberals don't care about that issue that much, the polls show. And that's really where the rubber meets the road. So it'll be interesting to see whether that changes going forward. Do people on the liberal side start paying attention to the positions of the people they're voting for or against? Or do they forget about it?
That's Wall Street Journal national reporter Zusha Ellenson. Zusha, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Emery. Really appreciate it.
And finally, during the pandemic, pets were showered with attention from their work-from-home humans. Now, as owners head back to the office and school, they're spending more time alone. And that's leading to a lot of anxiety. Whining, howling, and in extreme cases, dogs are tearing down blinds and chewing up furniture. Our personal health reporter, Alex Janin, says that dog parents are now finding creative ways to calm their four-legged friends when they're gone.
A veterinary behaviorist I spoke to said that one of her clients got sort of a human-sized dummy or doll and put her own clothes on the doll. And apparently it fooled the dog enough to where the dog was actually laying in the dummy's lap when the person left and convinced the dog that they weren't actually gone. Another thing that's come up a lot is owners are trying TV or movies that seem to relax the dog. One pet owner I talked to puts on Frozen every time she leaves the house. And whenever the dog starts to hear the beginning, the twinkle and sort of the early part of the song, "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" the dog gets super excited, jumps up on the couch, sits down, and doesn't even look at them when they're leaving anymore.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.